morning. Welcome to Business Over Breakfast. My name is Shelby Hessian, and I'm the Manager of Innovation and Entrepreneur Programs here at InnovaCorp. So welcome to the InnovaCorp Enterprise Center, which is our life science and clean tech incubator. So we're pleased today to have our topic on angel investing, and we're very pleased to tie into the National Angel Capital Organization, where they're having their annual conference here in Halifax. So we've got two directors of the organization, and let me introduce them. So closest to me is Annette Nedkoff. Annette is the founder and president of Nedkoff Holdings, a domestic and international corporation specializing in investment banking, international corporate expansion, and mergers and acquisitions for small and medium-sized enterprises. He founded InfoNet Media, the largest in-store advertising company in Canada and Europe. The company was sold to Act Media Inc., now a subsidiary of News Corp, a Robert Murdoch company, and he's currently a director on the National Angel Capital Organization. So welcome. Next to him is Louis St. Jacques. Louis is a founder and board member of Angels Quebec. And how do you pronounce that correctly? Perfect. And that's a nonprofit organization that facilitates angel investment in high-tech startups. He's been a director for the National Angel Capital Organization since 2009. And since 2010, he's been offering consultation services to entrepreneurs, incubators, angels, and venture capital organizations. He was a partner in ID Capital, a $75 million industrial technologies venture capital fund based in Montreal. He has more than 20 years of high-tech and financing experience, and he's got a master's degree in business administration with a specialization in small and medium-sized enterprise financing. So welcome.
Thank you.
So the format for the morning is question and answer. So I'll start off, and anytime you guys have some questions, just raise your hand, and I'll come around with the mic. We're actually doing a podcast at the same time, which will be available on our website later. And we also, by Skype, have a group from Sydney joining us. So Joe, one of the people, may put his hand up and let us know that there's questions from Sydney. So welcome, and I will start off. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself, because I know I skimmed over it. So kind of tell us a bit about your background. So we'll start with you, Louis.
First, I'm a dropout, so I'll leave the mic to...
Okay. Well, what I can say is do not go for dinner with me and my support at an event like this, because they're so entertaining. So basically, what drives me these days is two things. One, in terms of the angel world, I think of the angel world as becoming more and more of a true asset class. In other words, a form of potentially putting one's investments into something that will grow and become scalable and potentially produce a certain stream of revenue. Like everything in life, you have to be careful because it's not automatic. It's not an automatic win, but a small percentage, whether it's 5 or 10%, that's one aspect that I'd love to see. And in order to achieve that, we have to continue producing winners or companies that are successful. And that is not always the case, as you will know. So that's one aspect. Now, for the rest of my life, my day job, basically we have financed or we have encouraged a company called ICE, which stands for International Corporate Expansion, and we help these companies, or some companies, to scale into other markets. So we bring them to other countries, other markets. These places may speak a different language. The adults and the kids alike speak the same stranger language. So we help the companies to actually think in terms of adapting themselves themselves to those other markets and taking advantage of the market potential, which means in return for our angel members that if they invest in a company that all of a sudden can double its sales because it goes from North America to Europe, that helps their return on investment.
So I was joking. Yes, I'm in Dubai, but I have a path that is not regular, so for sure. I was studying in science and community college, but school was not for me, so I traveled in Europe and I came back. I entered at National Bank in a call center, MasterCard, and I bought the first PC, and then, you know, what happened with the PC in 84. So I introduced the first networks, the first internet connection over Apple 10, 15 years, and in 97 I changed completely my orientation. I joined the high-tech group, high-tech financing group at National Bank, and it was wonderful because you know, National Bank is probably not present here, but in Canada, I would say Quebec, Ontario, a little bit in Vancouver. So every high-tech business plan was coming to me. So I had about 300 to 400 high-tech business plans on my desk a year. So my knowledge of all the fields went like, but at the same time, I took the executive MBA, and we were having a cocktail every first Wednesday of the month, and we were collecting the business cards. We were inviting 700 people for this cocktail. So suddenly, my Rolodex went from zero to 1,000 people in a few months, and we were the attraction pole for high tech in Montreal. So I finished my MBA, and Charles Robby, who's running his personal holding telesystem, was the main shareholder of Telegram, and they sold it to Bell Canada, and he got $800 million. He was already having a VC group in ICT, and we suddenly told the bad guys, okay, instead of chasing money with pension funds, we're going to give you $100 million. So suddenly I was in a group who had $100 million to invest in ICT. But the crash happened. So instead of investing, he was trying to save his company, Fido, TIW, and so I left. But it was a really interesting experience because due to the fact that they were financing $500 million per year or two, we were connected with the best investment banker in the world, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Credit Suisse First Boston. So we were invited to their conference, tech conference in Silicon Valley. So my network went like crazy. But I left, and I accepted a job equivalent to the Atlantic Development Corporation, and I was helping startups to find money. I've done that for 2 years in a very tough time, and I found capital for six of them. And in 2006, Charles Sola called me again because they were building, creating an industrial technology fund. I've been there for 4 years. And by this time, in the same time, I created Dance Quebec because there was a gap in the financing of early stage companies where it was very difficult for them to get money. And they were coming to us, and they were probably 6 months too early for us. So I thought to myself, well, what we could do? And I knew a lot of angels because we financed them in the 90s, and they sold their company, and they were rich, and they want to invest. So I started this with two of my friends, and now Ange Quebec is is an organization with 115 members. Last year we made 9 investments, so we're growing, and we're probably one of the best organized groups in North America. We have a yearly budget of $1.2 million, and we're growing fast. Last year we closed a sidecar fund of $20 million, which will be completely invested in a few months. And we're already working on a 80 to 100 million sidecar fund only for Angel.
So, perfect.
It was a long introduction, sorry.
Okay. So, but there's a few things you mentioned that I want to kind of go back to. But first, how would we define an angel? So is there a certain definition to an angel?
Isn't this a time that we switch to French?
Yeah.
Right. So basically, the definition of an angel is an individual or person who will invest in usually fairly early stage startups or companies. And the distinction that an angel has compared to a VC or a fund is that they will work with their own funds. They will use their own savings or exit revenues. They may have sold a sizable company. They might have received an inheritance, and they will use their funds. This said, over time they got organized, like Louis with Ange Quebec. I started a group called TAG, a Toronto Angel Group, which is now called Maple Leaf Angels, and with Louis, 100 plus members, they get together and they attract, or Maple Leaf Angels, they attract other organizations like ILAP, various government organizations that want to foster and help the angels to identify companies that, along with their support, will be able to make it and be successful.
So what about an accredited angel? Is there a certain criteria?
There is you can be an accredited investor without being an angel. I would say the main difference between the two is the accredited investor will probably invest by himself in some companies, and I think there is some individual angels, but I think it's better that you're in a group because you can share the mindset, the expertise, and all this. And what is different from between an angel and a VC is, as he said, you're putting your own money, and when you're putting your own money, it makes a lot of difference. A partner in a VC fund, you're investing the money of pension plans, limited partner, we call them. So it's a little bit different. And I would say I've seen the two sides of the coin, and I'm working with those angels. And when you put your money, you know, and you've run companies in your past, your experience is there, and you guide the entrepreneur. You are there to avoid mistakes, and for your own network, you can open the door. So I think this is a great opportunity for
I'm drinking so much water. I hope it's, you don't think of me as Paul Ryan in the States, who's drinking so much water that they figure, oh, he's going to lose some points in the election. the accreditation that Shelley mentioned, it's important because it really is codified. It means to be an accredited angel, you must have $1 million of assets or an income of $200,000 individually or $300,000 as
family,
as your family, as your spouse.
And the $1 million is you exclude your real estate from that.
Right, right. So just wanted to clarify. But you don't, like we said, you can invest without being an accredited angel in small projects per se. But angel groups will take accredited angels only, and it's it's a way to protect the government's way of saying we want to protect investors.
So where do you guys kind of play? When would a business come to you, or how early, and kind of where are you kind of in the spectrum between VCs and family and banks, and kind of when do you want people to come and talk to you?
So basically, if I may, what happens is that either you sold your company, like I had, and people all of a sudden start calling you up for another subject, which is, can you invest in my company? Or can you invest in a company of such and such person? Belonging to an angel groups are even more visible and have ongoing contacts. Angel groups will either be working with incubators like yours here, accelerators, incubators, government groups, other organized groups. Like the next level after the angel group is the VC group, and there's a CVCA. So the Canadian Venture Association will pass along very often, or VC companies will pass along companies, like the companies that Louis used to work for. They would say, oh, this such project is too small for us. You may have had a $5 million minimum level upwards to invest, and if a company is an early stage company and it's looking for either $50,000 or $500,000, then that becomes an area of interest to the angels. Angels usually work with within $50,000 to $1 million investment.
So we've got a few entrepreneurs in the audience. So if they were going to come to you, what should they have? How far along should they, could it be an idea, prototype? So what do they need to know to come to see you guys?
I would say if you don't have a prototype, it will be very difficult to have an interest from the angels, because they want to take risks, but you must at least have something that works and that you can understand and see. It doesn't mean that it's not financeable, but it will be difficult. I think you should network properly with your community to try to get in touch with those people, or at least with your lawyer or your accounting firm. Those people generally are connected with the angels. So, and I would say it's never too early to meet some people who have money, because they can see you, the operation of your company. And when I was a VC, sometimes we were encountering entrepreneurs and they were too early for us. And we told them, okay, it's nice that you're too early, but you should focus on doing this. And they came one year and a half later, and two of them were financed, because we knew the people, they've done what we said you should do, and the evolution of the company was perfect. So never hesitate to meet those people.
So we were phoning you up for a cup of coffee, or do we come in with a business plan, or what do you want to see?
So basically, what you have to think of is your elevator pitch to attract the angel or the angel group over the phone, or in a brief encounter like we had this morning for coffee. So have that down pat. In other words, what is going to be attractive to the angel or to the investor, and that applies to everything. Secondly, when you go to see the angel group or the angel, have at least a presentation or an executive summary, in other words, a brief of what you do. sort of engage the overall formula, the overall four corners of what you're doing. And then the process from there is, if the angel group is interested in doing what we call due diligence. So due diligence means getting into the nuts and bolts of your company, understanding how viable it is and how close it is to their culture. So he will ask you for what is what we call, as you, a lot of you have heard, a business plan. And then that is going to be a platform to enable a real dialogue and questions to look deeply into the company.
So what are the pros of getting angel investing? Kind of what are the advantages of getting angel investing? Because I know a lot of times for me, one of my perceptions is you get the expertise to it.
Absolutely right. I think, and the tagline of Ask a Deck is very simple. Invest and self-invest. It's a everything.
Let's show, I don't, Cecile. Sure, let me come down with the microphone.
Actually, it's a good segue because you're talking about bringing your prototype. And since I deal with intellectual property, I have to ask, what role does it play in your decision-making? How important do you look at it at all? They have patents, trade secrets, or trademarks? Or
the first criteria in investment is people, people, and people. We prefer to have excellent executors and poor technology, and a great technology and poor executors. So it's a matter of people. And for me, the two most important things when you come to see us is the executive summary and the PowerPoint, a 10 to 5, 15 slide. If you're unable to convince me what you're doing in your executive summary, I'll pass on. So when you write this, make it read by your brother-in-law, your father, your spouse, anyone. And if they don't understand what you're doing, rework it. Because you're getting face of those people, and you won't be able to convince them that there's something interesting. So you'll miss the opportunity to meet them. So, but I say the IP is an important thing depending on your project. But as you know, protecting IP has a cost. So, and I've seen in a lot of companies 150K, 200K, and you don't have the money. And be careful when you're from a university or something like that. The reward in a university is to write papers. But when you write papers, you're getting access to a lot of information that could be a roadblock for protecting your IP.
Certainly, my experience with the 12 angel groups in Ontario and the NACA we deal with across the country, Quebec, to those groups, and they basically, since back to your question, having the IP is very important with the angel groups that I deal with, and in fact, they probably forget Lee's point of the management, because one doesn't work well without the other. You need both. You can take the best idea and give it to an average management and it won't go anywhere. On the other hand, you could maybe take an average concept and give it to a great management and it will go, it could go to the moon.
Listen, on the IP side also, what I've seen in the past is there is a lot of people who focus too much on the details of the IP, and you should have a 30,000 feet view. I call this it's not only about the IP, it's about the strategy of using your IP. Sometimes the cost of developing something is too high for you. You won't be able to get the money to develop it. You should probably better to license it.
Thank you. Your strategy is very important.
Absolutely. when I was with the DC group, instead of focusing on the technology, we brought pattern agents that were specialized in strategy. You create more value on the long term.
So, if I was an entrepreneur, I wanted to come to you guys, maybe I want $100,000, and you guys agree, how do you kind of form the deal? Is it common share, convertible debentures, you take a percentage, how does that work?
I would say to you, go to the ACA, it's the American Angel Capital Association. All the term sheets and shareholder agreements are there. And I would say it's probably the standard across North America.
So anybody could go to the website and access those forms? So that if you were going, you could become informed before you have the meeting?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
You will see the official term sheet that they prepare with the best lawyers in the USA and commercial.
So what you'll see basically, there are as many different types of having a contractual agreement between you as a company and the angel. What tends to be the flavor of the year, and of several years now, is basically very often debt or preferred shares. In other words, a debt instrument, $100,000, would say, okay, Shelly will give you $100,000. Now, this would be a debt. You will have a contractual obligation to pay back, as a debt. Yet we have the option to change it into shares at a specific given time, 2 years, 5 years, etc. At that time, Shelly is no longer a debtor. We become an equity investor, and we own either 10, 20, 30%, whatever the agreement is, of her company.
Okay. I'll get you to explain what a preferred share is to the audience, because you've mentioned that term.
Okay. So basically, in corporations, you tend to have two basic shares, voting shares, which are called common shares, and preferred shares. And preferred shares, the difference with preferred shares and the common shares is that common shares is voting. You can vote, therefore you can you really control the destiny of the company. However, preferred shares is non-voting. However, if the company were ever unfortunately to be dissolved, the preferred shareholder gets his revenues before, in a preferential fashion, before the common shares.
Yes, it's a way of protecting investors. I'll give you an example. If you have a 2x preference, it means that you'll get your money before all the common shares. And if there's enough money out the sale of the company, it could be possible that the common share will get envy. It's all explained on those term sheets.
Okay, so just go to the website, you can learn
more. ACA.
ACA. Any other questions? Okay, Paul?
Hi, I'm just wondering, you're talking about, again, that it's the people, really, that you're investing in. So can you describe what you're looking for at that point of investing? For example, in startup companies, you might have, let's say somebody who's got a little bit of business advice from a consultant, but they're basically a principal investigator in a university, and they're the ones backing the idea. Are you looking for trying to assess what team they're putting together, or, you know, in terms of your investment, are you also going to be involved in advising for finding a CEO, for finding marketing people, for finding other business people, that you're actually investing not only the money but also some contacts and resources to grow it? So what kind of people at the stage in which you want to invest are you really looking for?
The first thing we're afraid of is the one-man show. I don't know a lot of people who are magicians in all fields. You could be a really good researcher or being in a expert in your field. But I doubt that you have the competencies in marketing, in financing, in IP. So when we look at companies, we look at the team. Sure, if you just a graduated student, it will be difficult. But what I suggest to you is, by the time you have an idea, try to get people around you in an advisory board. So people who have experience in business, probably in your field. And I would say the traits, the qualities of the entrepreneurs we're looking for is dedicated, passionate, and I would say one that is very important to the audience. So when you got a bad adventure, if you were able to be back rapidly, it's a quality that we like.
You want to add to that?
Yeah, something interesting too. We at the NACO, National Angel Capital Organization, the Canadian Angels, work very closely with the ACA, and we see a lot of great things coming out of there and some average things coming out. And the question of a winner, obviously, you as a professor, you want to see that your entrepreneur that you're fostering, that you're helping, is going to be dedicated and going to be committed. So we do like to see either startups that have a set of background that we mentioned. However, if it's a person coming in with a proposition, we look for his competence in that field. Usually, we'd like to have the CEO who comes from that field, as opposed to coming from a completely different field. Then the question of the ACA is, in terms of success, we like to see success, and the ACA now is saying, well, we like to see people who have failed, because they would have learned from their failures. So that's a question of your own, your own decisions at that time, in terms of if you're an investor.
And never make the mistake to bring someone as a CEO who was in charge of, he was the CEO of a major company, because we've made this mistake as investors, VCs or angel, and those guys are adding 50 people around them to make the job. And when you're in a startup, you're doing everything, even washing the toilets. So, and those people want to be on there.
Now, you had referred to advisory boards, so let's talk about advisory boards and boards of directors, kind of the difference in where you guys are on, involved in a company, and this is angels.
It is just a difference of insurance. When you're on a board, you have some responsibilities. If the company doesn't pay his tax, you can be accountable to pay them for them. So usually people who are intelligent won't go in a startup because they don't need all that money. And so I accept some those jobs, but only on an advisory board.
Okay. So, but when you get financing from an angel, do you automatically have to set up a board of directors, and do you guys automatically take a seat on the board?
You don't have to have a board of advisors. You, in essence, become the board yourself as an entrepreneur. But going for outside board seats is recommended, and the further up the ladder you go, the further that board will be taken into account, all the way to from private companies to public companies, where it is required to have an independent or some independent board members.
So if any of these entrepreneurs are thinking about setting up a board of directors, what's the ideal number and kind of composition? So you're seeing outside. So what would be
composition?
Or no,
numbers of
the type of people you'd want to attract.
Basically, we've seen boards that go from 3 to 21. I think it's important to have an odd number of participants, obviously, if it's a vote. If you're 4 and it's 2 and 2, that vote has not been successful because there's no direction taken by the company. So you always want to have an odd number board.
Excellent. I think ideally it's when you're a small company, it could be as 3, but in my opinion, it should not be more than 9. Because the more voice you have, the more confusion you will get.
So I think we've got a question from our Sydney group. And the question is... Oh, okay.
Hello, this is Joseph from Stockholders. My question is there any difference in the return on investment that angels are looking for as compared to venture capitals?
So basically, angels come in early, and they will either ask for a holding of your company of, it depends on their style. They could be asking for 10% because they want to be nice and they maybe are early stage investors, or they could be asking for 50%. On Dragon's Den, you've seen some silly requests that are beyond that. It's very entertaining, and I'm not sure how often they are accepted. Now, on the other hand, the third stage of venture capital, it's something that becomes like a marker, whereby some angel groups will say, we will wait, we'll get debt, we will convert it to our ownership in your company based on the venture capital's valuation of your business. And the difference, obviously, an angel comes in early and your company may or may not be proven. A VC will come in at a stage that your company becomes scalable. And therefore, it's easier to tag in a number as to what the value of your company is.
And I think the difference between VCs and angels, VCs are looking for home runs, and angels are looking for double or triple. So if you want to go to the big mall, you better to go to VC to see the VCs. But not all companies are VC ready or VC interested.
We've got a question back here.
Hi, my name is Taylor. I'm going to go to Dow. Ethical investing has become more and more of a trend in the broader investing world, with mutual funds and whatnot, and certain parameters being set by the UN in terms of like what is ethical investing. Have you guys seen that there's more of a trend in the angel community across Canada in terms of ethical investing? And with your own investments, do you tend to avoid certain fields or certain industries, or is it really just based on the entrepreneur and the profit potential?
I've not seen any ethical way of or investing. I've never discussed it.
You know what? It's interesting. I was thinking of that too. We don't see that many. It's not a factor in the angel investing, it seems. We hear about it. I think it's personally very important. I think it'll be something that will be certainly discussed at universities, and it will be part of our lives in the future. But right now, it's pretty rare that we see companies coming with that formula or that ask.
But related to ethics, I would say that most angel groups have a strong code of ethics, because there's two things that kill the angel group. It's the voluntary fatigue, which means that you have a manager who does it for free, and after a few years, I'm doing everything, and the others are doing nothing. And the second thing is regarding the ethics. Some people are trying to make side deals that we are not aware of, and if this happens, we just it then automatically. So the ethics is important, but I would say a kind of ethic investment is in green technology, because green is better than oil, no?
Green is good.
Green or green?
Green. My name is Mike Morris. My question, you mentioned earlier that angels would be interested in debt or preferred shares, and I was curious about the terms around debt and who actually holds the debt.
Usually it's a convertible debt with a discount on the next round. Within Irish Quebec we have 18 deals, and I think we just have one convertible debt. The rest is preferred.
Yeah, we pretty well have the same numbers whereby we will always discuss convertible debt first. Now, in terms of the there may be a question as to whether or not it should be preferred shares or debt, you know. And that's another discussion where the ACA just loves preferred, and we have been doing more debt here. That's the only difference.
And I would say convertible debt or notes are popular in very, very early stage companies that were started in a university or an incubator, so where there is no way to see the value of the company because it's too early. So you prefer to add debt with a discount on the next one, and all the angels already see will give a value on the company.
And what sort of either security or guarantees are you looking for from the entrepreneurs?
You have to see if it's equity, you know, and equity is really the end game. That is very often the security that one will be that you'll be asked to do contractually. Unlike a bank, which will first ask you for your an arm and a leg, and you know, maybe a car.
Question right here.
Hi, my name is George Policaris. Just wondering on your views on crowdsourcing. It's a new trend, and I'd love to hear, you know, different angels and entrepreneurs have different views.
We have a
and one other thing is when would you be looking to exit? Like what period?
I guess
is it 3 to 5, or is it because of the economic crisis now turned 5 to 7 or more?
Yesterday there was a panel with two persons, one in favor of crowdsourcing, and once again it was very interesting. It was very actual.
Yeah. So basically, the difference is that from an association point of view, I think the association is a little intimidated and wondering where this crowdsourcing will do
I'll also get to explain what crowdsourcing is for people who may not know too.
So basically, crowdsourcing is a way to invest without being an accredited investor, number one, without having to invest $100,000. You can invest as little as $100 going upwards. So that's where the word crowd comes from. Certainly when we discussed it after with me and some friends, we said we should actually consider this. We are concerned that illegitimate companies that outreach to one of us through the media that you don't know, because crowdsourcing basically have an ask of investment. You do not go and meet the owners. You don't look at them in the light of their eyes. You basically are taking more of a risk. So from the association point of view, they're thinking, well, we've got to be careful. However, we've recognized that there has not been a problem yet, but it will. will happen. There have been some strange looking apples that got involved, and they were kind of weeded out right away, because crowdsourcing very often is through the social media. It's that type of approach and feel, and information passes along very, very easily. So you get to know if there's a problem.
I'm in favor in the sense that anybody of you can go to buy $50,000 of Lotto Max tickets to win the $50 million. But your chance are one on how many million? Secondly, anybody of you can invest tomorrow morning, and not tomorrow, it's Saturday, today, $50,000 in a penny stock on the stock exchange in Toronto, and you'll lose everything next week. So why would you impeach me to buy $50,000 of your stock company? So it's the same, all those three. Probably Lotto Max has the less possibility of winning. So, and if you're a good entrepreneur, I could make a lot of money with $50,000. I worked for Charles Leroy, and Charles invested in the entire in Quebec City $50,000, and at the IPO he got $12 million. So this is the kind of deal I would like to do.
So they also say that some crowdsourcing structures will only raise up to $30,000, or the average is $30,000, and they're really looking for $100,000 usually, or $50,000 and upwards. However, there has been, I think it's Australia, that where it's legislated by the government, you have a certain, it's like a stock market, and the average there is much higher. Has been, it's been indicated it was $300,000. I think Roman has a question.
VCs tend to have an exit within 7 years, but in my opinion, to create value, it's very difficult to, from a startup point to 7 years, to have a successful exit. If you're in a field that is growing, or you found a niche that is particular, I think to within 6 years, they had the good idea at the right moment, and I would say all the stars were aligned, but it's one on.
So basically, angels say 7 years, really good, but that's a VC number, and we realize that. We realize that we're using somebody else's number. The average exit usually ends up being between a toaster and a house, between a year to 17 years. My company, when I sold it, which is an in-store advertising company that's owned by News Corp now, we sold it after 17 years. And but we were very lucky, because unplanned, we made 147% return on our investment, on the investors' funds. Not altogether, but yearly. So we did very well.
Our experience at Orange Quebec, we have 18 companies, and one was sold 1 year after it was it got investment. So it's pretty fast, but we didn't make a lot of money. Probably one time were our investment, which is interesting, but we'd like to grow them usually. There's another one that was funded with $1.2 million, and they refused an offer of $10 million 1 year after. So I think that sometimes you have to refuse, and if we have an offer of $10 million now, if we grow the company, it could be 25, 50 within a few years. It depends on what the entrepreneurs want, because usually at the beginning you're still the majority shareholder, and we're the minority. But you will see in the terms of the term sheet that usually within a time frame we will ask you to buy us back. It's a kind of protection, in the sense that if you want to run the company as a lifestyle business for just for you for the next 25 years, I don't want to have my money in 25 years. I want to have my money in a horizon where I can go add an exit.
Yes, Ray Roberts, I'm with the caller. I have three questions. Can you give us an indication or an idea of the range of investment that angels would make, you know, in dollar-wise? Secondly, do you typically reserve funds for a follow-on investment in a company? And thirdly, how do you feel about syndication, and does that help the process if the company can bring a syndication to the...
Basically, the average investment of an angel group is something to the order of $252,000. So it's about $250,000. That is invested in average. Obviously, some investments are $100,000, some may be $1 million. So jumping to the third question, you will find syndications of about $2 million to $3 million, because you may have three or so angel groups that invest together. Oscar Beck has invested with Maple Leaf Angels in a company called First Street. And so basically that is a way for the other group to say, oh, they've done their due diligence, they are around the street, we know them well, we'll co-invest. What was your question number two?
Reserving some follow-on investment for the next round. For the
you company. Always want to keep the right powder. It's in our model. We generally reserve some amount of money for the second round. The statistics at our group is the average deal is $400K. Usually there is 9.1 angel and for diluted 0.1, and it's a 45 average per angel. So it gives you this is the average, but we have some deals from 200K to 1.2 million, and sometimes it goes with our sidecar fund, it should be higher.
So we are talking about France Quebec. They are 400, which is wonderful.
And I think the American average is 450. You probably be able to find those stats on the ACA website.
Yeah, it's we'll see. It's 250 that 252 that we had heard, but I don't know what the so interested to see. Yeah.
Okay, so that person will
come
up to you.
Yeah, so I'm going to go right away. I'll have three questions for you. So the first question: what's the average in Maple Leaf Angels? Louis, you mentioned something about a discount on the next round. If you do debt, what kind of discount do you normally look for?
25%.
And then what's your evaluation process?
So you asked about Maple Leaf Angels. It's about 280,000. We are actually discussing about moving it up, and we're talking about 500,000. So evaluation process, you asked me, right?
Evaluation process, I've read so much on that subject, but I've been in the investing world since 15 years, and there is no way to evaluate the company. What we can evaluate is what is the cost to bring the technology to the where you are now. This is a way to get evaluation, but I would say we have done fairly of these companies. For 500K, you should leave 33%, so which gives you a evaluation of 1 million. It's for pretty of new companies. That's what I've seen mainly in Montreal, Quebec. So, but I would say it's very, very difficult, and that's why you should shop, but don't shop too much, because you diminish your odds to get money.
One word of advice is do not come up with a valuation the angels are thinking. It's coming at $10 million valuation. I want to eventually do 10 times return on my investment. That means he's got to sell it, or she. He's got to sell it for $100 million. It doesn't compute.
But if we give you options, and you build up the equity, if you stay longer?
Well, what you have to remember is that angels very often think in terms of exit. I think angels should be pushing more bonuses or dividends, which was the original way of investing way back until the stock market came up with equity. One can make large returns by selling one's company. The average company sells for something like the ones that have been selling for about $30 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's why the $3 million valuation that they tag on it.
Mm-hmm.
So all the rest, yes, it's nice and dandy, and if you think that you're going to be the next Facebook, fine, then that's another matter. But right now, this is the norm.
You know, say so don't expect valuation that I can tell you within the next the last 10 years I've seen only 4 or 5 companies growing to more than 100 million in sales in Quebec. So in 10 years it's not a lot.
Louis, this is just kind of a follow-on question to Ray's. Was you characterized your typical investment being 9 to 10 angels, $45,000-$50,000 levels? How many total angels do you have in your group?
115.
So you're looking at 10% of the angels going into one deal, or less than that, 7.5%.
Yeah. So at the beginning, I think there was we had 54 angels that invested in 106. No, we have 54 different angels who invested in 100. That invested 167 times. So an average of 3 deals per angel.
Okay. And the second question is related to vendor financing. Do you guys look at vendor financing as a means for entrepreneurs to get money into the business? Is that kind of post-angel investing and instead of VC, or do you look at that as something that's in combination with angel financing? Is it something that you look for as a way to kind of syndicate some of, or de-risk some of that investment? That
if you can make money that is not dilutive, take it. No?
So we're almost at time. A couple of questions. How long is the process? So when somebody comes in to have the initial conversation, is it 3 months, 6 months? How long is the process?
Usually, everybody hopes that it's going to be 2 months. We're finding that it's longer. 4 months could be a comfortable figure that I would say we're experiencing.
I think it's about around 3 to 4 months. By the time you submit your files to our group, we have a baby triage. Then, if you choose, and you're invited to present to our next monthly meeting. So it's between 1 day to 30 days there. After that, if there is interest in your file, we have coordinators that organize a meeting within the next 10 days to discuss more on the opportunity. It's a 2-hour meeting. Usually it's done in 2 weeks. So if it goes well, it could take 1 month. So the last is 2 months, and usually I would say around 3 or 4 months.
So you two have been involved in advising and mentoring companies. So what are the common mistakes you see, and if you were going to give advice to our entrepreneurs in the audience, so once they're actually up and running, what do you see?
So basically, the first thing you want to do is, as an entrepreneur, is keep your investors abreast of what is happening in the company. Whether it's through reports or through phone calls, very often there will be a stipulation that there is that report. Let's chat and have communications. And it's very important to have that communication, because it will happen that eventually you'll need more money. And you don't want, which as everyone so I will hear, someone saying, my goodness, what's happening to our investment? So if it's not doing well, you know, the entrepreneur may not be very keen on talking to the investors exactly at that time. They'd rather talk to sales, get sales, or get other investors. So that's the number one starter.
I think the most common mistake I've seen is to refuse money when we offer you money, in the sense that you're afraid of dilution. And except if the people are crooks, and so you can easily know that. If you want to take 75% of your company for 100K, bye-bye. There is a thing in French, I'll say it in French and try to translate it. Quand la madame passe avec une tape, t'apprends un morceau même si t'es pas fin. When the lady passes by with a pie, take a piece, even if you don't have you're not hungry, because you never know when she's going to come back.
Perfect. Any final thoughts for the audience?
Basically, just to feel, I assume that you're mostly from this area, so very proud of what you're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
You are amongst one of the most successful areas in the country in terms of the angel activity and the government support. It's done very intelligently. Besides Quebec, we see that this area is an example that we want to show, and we talk about it often.
Good, thanks.
I would say continue, because you're the future of Canada, in the sense that we lost a lot of manufacturing jobs in the last 20 years, and those jobs are going to Asia and everywhere. And if we want to create wealth in this country for paying for university and health services, we need more money. And I think the innovation is one of the best ways to create value. And this is our future, and it's for your future kid. So continue.
Perfect. Thank you. Let's give them a round of applause.